faith of children. We are small, yet big enough for our broken wings to be mended when eyes are not gazing the sky. Faith of children brought us through howling wind and crushing waves, through conquests of explorers and kings, past cargoes and wagon loads of slaves.
And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and coming up Wednesday, March 10th, poet laureate John Warner Smith will be making a virtual visit to Northwestern State University. His visit will be about reading of his poems and also his selection as poet laureate and his time as poet laureate. And joining me now via Zoom are Shane Rasmussen, who's a professor of English and director of the Louisiana Folklife Center at NSU, as well as Andrew Briceño, assistant professor of English and creative writing at Northwestern State University, along with our poet laureate, John Warner Smith. John, welcome.
Well, thank you, Bill.
All right. And Andrew, welcome. And Shane, I'm going to turn it over to you. And Andrew, the only question I have to start off with, John, you were a successful banker and you were also in administration. At what point in your life did you decide that you were going to pass that opportunity by to make money, which seems to be the core principle of America, and go into poetry, which, is not exactly the most lucrative business, let's just say.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. But, you know, Bill, I was those years when I was a banker and I'd been a public administrator even before my banking years. And then I went back into government, I went into state government when I left banking. But in all those years, I was writing poetry. And I guess I like to say that poetry was tugging on me. Poetry was sort of calling me. And, of course, I was, you know, trying to pay the bills and, you know, provide for my family and had no interest in you know, writing, I guess, as a professional or being a writer. But it was something that I just felt like I had to do, you know. And then it was 2008. I had actually left state government and doing some other things and decided that I was going to take my writing more seriously in my old age, you know. What was old back then? Go back to school and formally study creative writing. So I did that at the University of New Orleans.
Okay.
And, you know, I guess the rest is history, you might say. But long before my MFA professional work that I'd been doing, I was writing poetry, you know. Didn't know I was a poet at the time, but what I felt called to do, what I was being pulled toward, you know. And it was, I'm so glad that I made that decision, though, to take it seriously, to formally study creative writing. I had some great instruction at the University of New Orleans and actually did a couple of summer residences out of the country in San Miguel, Mexico, and Edinburgh, Scotland, you know, and all of that just took me to another level, you know. And then I'll say this one last thing, too. Shortly after completing my MFA, I got accepted to Cave Canem. Cave Canem is kind of a prestigious sort of writing program for black poets. I'd been rejected twice. And out of the whim, I said, well, let me try one more time, right? And I got accepted. And so I did three writing retreats with Cave Canem, and that just kind of just took my writing experience to another level. I was taught by great poets, award-winning poets. I became part of a community of poets sharing work, and it just, you know, it was then that I began to say, well, maybe that's who I am. Huh? Maybe I'm not a banker. Maybe I'm not a public administrator. I am a teacher and a poet. So that's what I've been doing.
Andrew?
First off, thank you, John, for being here and for reading for us this week. We're so excited to have you. I was just wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about your latest book, Our Shut Eyes, and the approach that it takes and, like, the important work that it's up to.
Yeah, Our Shut Eyes will be published in a few months. It's really, to put it plainly, these are poems on the subject of race in America. And in these poems, in many of them, I draw from my own personal experience, you know, having grown up as a poor boy in the South and having experienced firsthand racism and Jim Crow and, you know, segregation, inequality and all of that. So I do draw largely on personal experience. A couple of years ago, the thought came to me that this would be the 40th anniversary of the Atlanta child murders. And I said, you know, that's a pretty big deal there. And I started tinkering with a couple of poems about the Atlanta child murders. I lived through that experience from 1979 to about 1981. I was living here in Louisiana and remember reading and hearing about those murders. And I thought it would be important, you know, as a writer, I would write a few poems. So it turns out that nearly half the book dedicated to that experience. So I'm so glad that it's going to be published this year, because this actually would sort of mark that year when 30 black children had been murdered in the city of Atlanta. And I don't know if you know the story, the details of the story, but only two of the murders were really solved. So 22, 23 of the poems of Our Shut Eyes deal with that experience. And the other poem, again, as I said, touch on America, not just in the South, but America in general, but the whole experience of the race problem that continues to haunt us as a country today. So that's essentially what the book is going to be about.
From the poems that I've had a chance to read, it seems to me like you bring a really, I don't want to say unique, but somewhat rare perspective, at least from the poetic community, in that there's a clear historical call back. I see so much influence from Langston Hughes and James Baldwin, and I just wondered if you could talk about what you think those poets have to say to America now.
Yeah, well, you know, you touched on two very important names there. You know, when I was discovering poetry, or poetry was discovering me, the writers of the Harlem Renaissance were, I guess, the first writers whom I read, you know, and Langston was at the top of the list. I just, what really impressed me about Langston Hughes and how, I guess, you might say he influences my writing today is, you know, Langston Hughes wrote for everyday people, and he just told those stories. His poetry reflects, I think, the lives of just ordinary working people. And so when I sit down to write, that's what I'm thinking. I'm not writing to be published. I mean, it's great that I get published in literary journals across the country, you know, but the average American just isn't reading those journals. And so I'm speaking to them. Whether they find the poem or not, you know, I'm trying to touch on those experiences that ordinary, and particularly black men and women and children, are experiencing. James Baldwin, would you believe that at one time in my life, I thought I was going to be a protest writer like Baldwin, you know? But he was also that type of a writer who spoke about socio-political problems of America. And, of course, Baldwin did it in ways that which no other writer, I think, of his time did. You know, he just spoke truth. And that's really what I try to bring to my poetry. You know, I want to speak to want to speak truth to the experience. And I draw largely from my own experience and the experiences of my parents and grandparents, you know, because we all went through that period of in which America was really kind of struggling to live up to who and what America really defined itself to be through its, you know, its Declaration of Independence and its Constitution. So Baldwin has always been a great influence on the writing.
Awesome. So just to kind of take it in a somewhat different direction, one of my students asked me the other day, and I didn't have the great answer, so I'd like to kind of refer to you. Mm-hmm. What does a poet laureate do?
Yeah, well, we bring poetry to the state. I sort of see myself as an ambassador sort of poetry. I ask myself the same question. I did ask myself the same question when I saw the announcement. You know, I mean, I had met several poet laureates and knew somewhat personally some former poet laureates of Louisiana, and you know, kind of knew, you know, that they were representatives of. This genre of this art as they travel across the state, but didn't know a whole lot of, about what they actually did on the, you know, on a day to day basis. so I had to sort of do a little digging and do a little research when I decided I was going to go ahead and apply for this. But I travel across the state. I've traveled to every region of the state. Bringing poetry to communities across Louisiana. I've done, I don't know, countless readings, both in person and virtually, really trying to help the world and the state to appreciate how poetry can add value and meaning to our lives. And so that's essentially what my role is, you know. And I've read in front of an audience of 5 or 6 people. I read in front of an audience of several hundred people. You know, if you invite me, I'll show up some kind of way, virtually or in person.
Shane, just curious, you said you had, before we went on with the interview, that you had taught some of John's works in your classes. What was that experience like, and how did the students approach these works as being taught in the class, and knowing that this is not a dead poet, which is what a lot of times you end up teaching in classes, but this is actually a living poet, and poets still live among us.
Well, and they do, and you know, I found out about I was unacquainted with John's work until about the summer of last year, in which case I was looking at the poet laureates and I discovered his website and started to read the poems, and I was so deeply impressed. And I started assigning them in my classes in the fall. And we did 4 poems. And John, you're going to know these. Probably bring them to mind. Wise Old Men, Songs We Never Heard, Gazing, Faith of Children for Louisiana. And these were, I got to tell you, they were really accessible. The students wrote on John's poetry and responded to his poetry also in their analyses on the exams, probably more than any other person that I taught that term, because they found it to be so, they were able to connect with it in I think a very personal way. Partially because, you know, he's, you know, I put on the YouTube video of him reading his poetry. And they could see and hear the passion as he read Faith of Children from Louisiana. They could hear the tonality of his voice. There's a distinct rhythm. Also, when he reads, when John reads, he takes his time. And there's a certain kind of phrasing that really, the ideas build upon each other incrementally in a really interesting way. And they were able to respond to that because it kind of broke down the layers of meaning in the poems. So it was really a great success. I'm teaching this poetry again tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to, you know, I've already told them, look, you're going to be able to see and talk with and ask questions to John on Wednesday evening. And we want to just make this invitation to anybody listening. This is going to be on Microsoft Teams. And if you go to the Louisiana Folk Life Center Facebook site, you can see there'll be a QR code that you can use. Also, there'll be a Teams address that you can use if you want to just copy that in. And also, we're going to have that same poster on the Red River Radio site, so you can use that code or address as well. This is a free, open to the public event. And we also want to really thank the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Humanities for making this possible. Yeah. And of course, thank John for making this possible as well.
Really looking forward to it. And thank you for sharing my work. And I feel so honored and humbled that, you know, that anyone, be they students or adults in the working world, you know, would find any meaning in my poetry and would want to read it. So that always uplifts me, so, you know, and inspires me. And you never know where poetry it ends up. I never would have imagined that I'd be, you know, my poetry would be speaking to college students at the university or anywhere in the world. You know, you're just sitting in your little quiet space and write these little poems and then you send them out into the world. And you just never know how they will end up, where they will be found or how they will touch people.
And John, I got one kind of follow-up question, because Shane had said something there that struck me. And I'm somebody who my heart hears through my ears, if you understand that. A poem on a piece of paper can say something to me, but very often it is when a poet or a good reader of a poem, which are not always the same, but a good reader of a poem can bring a poem to life to me in a way that words on a page cannot. And when you're writing, do you find yourself first speaking the lines and then writing them down, or is it vice versa? How does that process go for you?
Yeah, well, two comments about that. Let me comment first on the reading process. And, you know, when I read a poem publicly, what I most enjoy is reading when I'm looking and I can gaze into the eyes and the faces of people as I read. And you can't imagine what kind of a rush I get out of that. Mm. And I can read all day doing that. You know? I don't know if you call it entertaining, but, you know.
Well, that's what the performer of music feels when they're performing to the audience. You know, there's a give and a take, an adrenaline and a spiritual flow back and forth.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, this give and take. And it is a spiritual kind of experience. So, and I do make an effort to, whether I'm reading face-to-face or I'm just, you know, reading in front of a laptop doing a video, I do that intentionally. I do pace. I do read so that the words and, you know, the pauses in between the words and the lines are heard, right? Mm-hmm. Because a pause, I think, is just as important as a spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps the hearer, I think, to feel the poem. So when I write poetry, you know, the other part of the answer is I don't compose originally, you know, from a computer. I'm an old school guy. You know, I write longhand.
Yep.
I start off that way, and then at some point I'll type it up, and then I'll carry it around. I'll work on it. I'll revise it. You know, it's like it's in my head, and I've got to finish it. And I don't know. I don't think I ever. In fact, I know I don't. I don't write several poems at the same time. I'm writing one poem. I'm working that poem, and for me, I've got to feel it. I've got to hear the rhythm of the poem. The sounds have to be just as meaningful as the words of the poem. And so, at some point, I begin to read the poem out loud, so that the sounds of the poem are real to me. Because I really think that's an important element of poetry. It's not just, you know, it's not just the words, but the pauses and and then the sounds of vowels and consonants, of the words that add to the beat or the rhythm of the poem. So at some point, yeah, I do that. I read out loud. The hardest thing for me, to be honest, is to let the poem go. You know, Faith of Children, for example, was one of those kind of poems that I probably spent more time with that poem than with most, because of its and I have a tendency to write long poems, you know. But that one was a poem that I wrote during the pandemic, and I wanted to speak as a child and through a child about, well, I didn't mention the word COVID or pandemic, but to speak to this experience that, you know, we're going to get through this, Louisiana. You know, we just have to have the faith of children. So, but I took a sort of, I don't know, maybe historical retrospective of other challenges that we have overcome over centuries as children, you know, beginning with slavery and on and on. Mm-hmm. And I wanted that message to be, you know, that, look, through faith, we're going to get through this as we have in the past. Right, and I wrote and revised and wrote, and then at some point I put it on a recording, and then even after recording it, I said, man, I need to work on this some more. Right, just, you know, I'm not, the rhythm is not there that I really want. So that one I probably spent more time on, I think, on than most poems that I've written in recent years. And I'm glad to hear that some students have found it worthy of listening to and reading. Yeah.
When you were, I guess, in a sense, made poet laureate, you said that you wanted to be sure to speak to the rural population of the state, to the youth that were in some of these rural areas. You know, and that's you know, in Senla and Northwest Louisiana, we've got a lot of those kids.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them are up here that are living in pretty small towns. I think we'll have an opportunity to hear you that will be their first opportunity. You know, I think, and I'm hoping, that some of them will be inspired to document some of their experience with poetry. What would you say, what advice would you give to a young poet?
I've answered that question before. Let me tell you, I poetry was tugging at me. When I think back over the years, poetry was tugging at me for long, long before I even started writing poetry, because I was appreciating poetry. I was reading poetry and literature. And I'll try to make this answer short, but but let me say this. When I was in college at McNeese, working on my first degree, it's when I really sort of discovered American literature. I had taken English and American Lit in high school, but in college, I don't know, it just sort of came to life. And, and I ended up graduating my first degree at McNeese with enough credits in English to teach English, right? Because I just loved English. So what am I going to do with a teaching certificate? I'm not a teacher. I need to go make money in the world, right? And so I kind of tucked my teaching certificate away. I actually went back to school to get a degree in accounting. And then I found myself many decades later being an English teacher and a lover of poetry and writing. So my advice to young people is to follow your passion. Follow that passion. Don't worry about what the world thinks. You know, yeah, you're not going to make a lot of money. You're not going to get rich being a writer, a poet. But you're going to give a gift to the world that's going to be just as valuable and just as meaningful to their lives. So, you know, if you have an inclination to write creatively, go with it. Follow it, you know, and you know, let it take you where it wants to take you. So, and the other thing I tell them is to read, because that, I think, made more of a difference for me than anything else, you know. And I really stress that to the students I teach. I would encourage young people today to, if you have an interest in writing, literature, read poetry, read novels, you know. Read whatever interests you, but by all means, read. And when you put those two together, you know, your passion and the knowledge that you gain from reading, you can change the world. So I'm pumped up. Can't wait for the reading and the Q&As on Wednesday.
Well, Andrew and Shane and John, I want to thank you so much for joining me for the spotlight today.
Thank you for having
me. Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. That was Poet Laureate John Warner Smith, along with Shane Rasmussen, a professor of English and director of the Louisiana Folklife Center at Northwestern State University, and J. Andrew Briceño, assistant professor of English and creative writing at Northwestern State University. They joined me this morning via Zoom to discuss Poet Laureate John Warner Smith's upcoming virtual visit to Northwestern State University, taking place tomorrow, Wednesday, March 10th, from 6 until 7:30 p.m. He'll be reading selections from his upcoming fifth collection of poetry titled Our Eyes Shut, New and Selected Poems on Race in America, and that'll be followed by a question and answer session. The event is free and open to all and can be accessed online using Microsoft's Teams and the code nsu.la.jws events. For more information, contact Dr. Shane Rasmussen at 318-357-4332. That's 318-357-4332. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.
The sun's a-setting. This is what I'm gonna sing. Sun's a-setting. This is what I'm gonna sing. I feel the blues are coming. I wonder what the blues will bring.